Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. We're lucky because joining us this week is Jesse McKinley, the Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Times. Welcome back, Jesse. It's terrific to have you here with us.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
Okay. The year in review in New York State government and politics was a fairly normal start to a year, 2020, with a state budget proposal, a number of plans, proposals, and even an Environmental Bond Act being derailed by COVID-19. So, first of all, have you ever seen anything like this before?
Well, I don't think anyone's seen anything like this before. I mean, the pandemic completely upended every conceivable plan for the year, you know, legislatively, whether, you know, Governor Cuomo's plans, the plans of the progressive wing of the assembly, the progressive wing of the Senate, any plans that state or local governments may have had for, you know, proposals to you know, doing everything from building schools to, you know, building playgrounds. Everything got upended by the fact not only that our, you know, our lifestyle got changed by the pandemic and that, you know, thousands of people lost their lives and went through unspeakable tragedy, but also that the budgetary constraints and the collapse of the economy in a lot of sectors really, you know, hamstrung the ability of governments to raise revenue and to spend money. So it was a complete wash in a lot of places.
You know, Jesse McKinley, I'm a political scientist, and we studied power. Has power shifted in New York State?
Well, I think the only way to say that is that it has shifted almost exclusively to the dominion of Andrew Cuomo, the governor. You know, the emergency powers that were granted to him in late February, early March, when the pandemic first started to rear its ugly head here in New York, are vast and have been in effect ever since. You know, the governor has wide discretion over he basically has the ability to set law via executive order on everything from school closings to business closings to budget adjustments, you know, across the board, the kind of powers that generally do have some sort of legislative check on them. So if there's been any consolidation of power, it has happened in the second floor of the state capitol where the executive branch resides.
Jesse McKinley, you hang out up there. You know these people. You have an office in the legislature. Let me ask you this. What are you hearing from legislators? It seems to me the little I'm hearing is, on the one hand, we gave the governor all of this power. On the other, we don't like it. Is that too broad a brush?
No, I think that's a pretty accurate description of the psychological thinking of a lot of lawmakers. You know, I think that the emergency powers that were granted to him will eventually lapse. But I think the thinking amongst a lot of lawmakers is this is not over. You know, we have at least another 3 to 6 to 9 months of this, depending on the rollout of the vaccine. There's still a lot of people sick in the state of New York. There's still way too many deaths, you know, nearly 900 last week, probably about that same number this week. You know, this is still an ongoing crisis. So I think the lawmakers certainly do want to get back in the game. I think they certainly do want to be a check on the executive power in the state and Governor Cuomo's power. But I think there is also a realization that this is not over yet. So I would suspect that within the next 6 months, there will be more serious considerations and conversations about kind of rolling some of those powers back. But we're not at that point yet.
Now, these guys don't want to die, these legislators. Therefore, almost everything has to be done at home, online, other ways. So it seems to me part of it is just that they're selfish. You know, on the one hand, we want to make sure that we have our power. But on the other, I'm not going up there.
Well, that's one interpretation. I don't think I share that interpretation.
Too cynical?
I would never call you cynical, Alan, but look, I think that the thing that the pandemic has illustrated in a more, let's say, optimistic and rosy worldview would be that perhaps the legislature is a little bit more nimble than we used to think it. There has been for decades and nay centuries of traditions of coming to Albany to make laws to do the people's business. And I think the one thing that the pandemic taught us is that we don't necessarily have to be in Albany to do Albany's work. There have been a lot of committee meetings held by Zoom. There's been legislation passed by remotely. There's been good public policy instituted via, remote legislating and emergency response via, online methods. So I think the legislature and the executive branch, to its credit, have managed to adapt to not having to sit in the same room with each other when they make these decisions. Now, the question will become, how much longer can we do this without there being some breakdowns with things not getting done, with negotiations becoming, much more difficult remotely rather than sitting, three men in a room, which has been the traditional way of hammering out not only a budget deal, but also, big pieces of public policy. I would argue that there certainly is something to be said for people sitting across from each other and breaking bread and making deals. But I think in so much that the legislature has had to do its business remotely and the executive branch has had to do some of its negotiating remotely, I think they've done a pretty good job thus far.
Now, Andrew Cuomo keeps telling us, Jesse McKinley, that he is not interested in being Attorney General of the United States, that he's going to stay where he is. First of all, what's his own popularity looking like right now? He's doing pretty well, isn't he, considering everything?
I haven't seen recent polls on him. I think he's been doing pretty well during the course of the pandemic, well over 50, certainly in the 60s, I think the last time I checked. He's still 2 years out now from a reelection campaign, but as we know, covering politics, these races start earlier and earlier and earlier. In terms of his political prospects, let's break them down one by one. I think he's certainly going to run for a fourth term in 2022. I think he's already raising money for that. I know he's raising money for that. And I think that if you look at the landscape of potential challengers, I don't see a Republican of statewide prominence who would really give him a run for money. I think his most potent challenge would probably come from a Democratic primary from the left, a la Cynthia Nixon in 2018. But as we saw in 2018, Cynthia Nixon was not able to ding him very badly and lost that primary pretty badly. And that was before, Cuomo became so popular nationally as a result of his early response to the COVID epidemic. Now, keep in mind, I think that, the governor has had a few self-inflicted errors of late. I don't know that the book was a great idea, considering that since the book came out, thousands of New Yorkers have died. I think there was a sense of a kind of George Bush mission accomplished victory lap on that I think struck a lot of people as not appropriate. And I think that has given Republicans a pretty powerful talking point against him. I think the nursing home issue continues to be a bad look for him. I think that he has never come up with a politically satisfying answer for why, sick nursing home residents were sent back into nursing homes. He has said, of course, it wasn't the nursing home residents, it was the nursing home staff. But I still think that politically speaking, that argument is not particularly powerful because you've had thousands of nursing home residents die. So I think that there are lines of attack against the governor, probably from the right and from the left, but he seems, with a 60% approval rating, that's pretty hard to beat a guy, particularly a guy who's got the name recognition that he has now, not only statewide, but nationally. Then, the second part of that question, if I can continue to bloviate, would be whether or not he's looking at national office. And, you know, it makes me cringe, but, you know, 2024 is right around the corner. You know, the presidential posturing will begin almost as soon as Joe Biden is inaugurated next month. So we will be, you know, starting to talk about 2024. And whereas you and I have differed in the past as to whether or not Andrew Cuomo would be a viable presidential candidate, I think we're pretty much in agreement now that he probably thinks he is a viable presidential candidate in 2024. And I would not be as surprised to see him at least nibble at the fringes there, you know, set up an exploratory committee or at least talk to some high profile political consultants or kind of test the waters in terms of fundraising and start to figure out if he is a guy who could run for the nomination, presuming that Joe Biden does not want a second term, which he's said in the past he doesn't. But, you know, politicians do nothing but change their mind. So maybe that'll change. So anyhow, I think that he has options. I think that he will probably run and be reelected for a fourth term. And then the 2 years beyond that will be very interesting to watch.
Let's go to the vaccine and to COVID. Obviously, you know, he wrote a book about it. Didn't turn out quite the way he thought. It's not 1% now. It's getting close to 8%, which is huge numbers. But what does he do now? Are his hands tied? Does he just have to give the truth at press conferences?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, are his hands tied? No. I mean, if he wanted, he could shut down the whole state again. Once again, as we mentioned before, he's got emergency powers that allow him to do pretty much what he pleases if he feels it's in the best interest of the state to fight COVID. He does not want to do that, however. He does not want to shut down the economies. He does not want to put people out of work. He does not want people's kids not to go to school. He wants to keep stuff open, not only, you know, to give him the benefit of the doubt, not only because politically closing down businesses and closing down schools are that those are very unpopular ideas, but to give him the benefit of the doubt, you know, they're also incredibly disruptive to people's lives and to their families and to, you know, childcare and to income and to paying the rent. You know, these are big issues. And I think that in March, when this was a new disease that was scaring people to death, they were much more willing to kind of take those steps in order to safeguard themselves and their families. I think that COVID fatigue is real, and I think that people are resistant, more resistant now to those sorts of measures. So I think for him, it's not that his hands are tied. I think to an extent he's being a realist. You know, he's saying, look, you know, we're having people, you know, disagree and not comply with these policies now. Even if I put in more stringent restrictions, they may not comply. But maybe if I can cajole them with kind of half measures and kind of nibble at the edges and, you know, close some things down partially, and we can at least control it rather than letting it get out of control. Now, you know, we're right back up to 8,000, almost 8,000 people in the hospitals now. You know, as I said before, you know, over 100 people a day are dying again. That is terrible, terrible, terrible news. And I don't think we're anywhere near, you know, we're not going to be vaccinated in the state for months and months and months, you know, to a point that everyone's going to be safe. So it's going to get dark for a few more months. And I will be curious to see if he does, you know, have to at some point, you know, shut down the city or shut down parts of the state again in order to rein it in. Because right now, you know, he had this microcluster plan that he unveiled in October. I don't think that did the trick. You know, it certainly, the disease certainly got out of those clusters into the kind of broader population. He's trying to do it with kind of, he's trying to control it now with kind of lesser measures. And right now we're still right in the thick of things. So we'll see if he has to do something more extreme.
Now, Jesse McKinley, Cuomo has signed executive orders on vaccine fraud, which I'm very interested in. Eviction moratorium, state pay raises. Tell us about those.
Well, the vaccine fraud was an interesting case. It kind of popped up last week. You know, there is, if he addressed it again on Monday, I believe, you know, there are people that will get their hands on this vaccine and try to divert it to places it doesn't need to be. You know, right now it needs to be on the front lines. You know, it needs to be with healthcare workers and with you know, nursing home residents and people that are kind of susceptible to this disease. And yet, you know, once again, because it is a deadly disease and it's scaring people, there are some malicious forces at work that have diverted some of those doses to places they shouldn't necessarily be at this point. So he's, you know, he's trying to wrangle those cats as well. You know, in terms of executive orders over state pay, you know, as I said before, the budget holes are not going anywhere, you know, and these are billions and billions of dollars worth of holes that are going to have to be filled by hook or by crook by April 1st. You know, just to kind of segue into a different topic, you know, there's been discussion in the legislature about coming back and trying to pass, you know, new taxes to kind of raise revenue. We've had this conversation before. You know, there's not many options right now for the state of New York to fill these holes. You're either going to have to raise some revenue via taxes, you're going to have to cut programs, or you're going to have to get money from the feds. And I think the governor's calculation at this point is that money is going to come streaming down from Washington once Joe Biden becomes president in 3+ weeks. And I think that's not a bad bet. But until then, there are not a lot of options to fill those holes.
Now, there's this whole question of curtailing fraud in this vaccine distribution. Is there a group or is there a group of people that tend to be on Cuomo's radar?
Well, I think that the Department of Health has been looking at a number of reports around about this. But, you know, at this point, the vaccine distribution is in its very early stages. You know, we're only 3 weeks in at this point. I think there is some sense, you know, Cuomo has said that, you know, we've vaccinated more people than any other state, you know, et cetera, at all. But the numbers are still not particularly impressive, you know, 3 weeks in. I think that we're in the hundreds of thousands. I think people are anticipating or were anticipating kind of broader, more instantaneous vaccination. I think if you talk to people who are actually doing the vaccinations, they're like, this is a laborious process. You do have to, you know, be safe. You have to use sterile equipment. You have to put the needles in the arms. You have to, and also you have to do two doses of both the Moderna and Pfizer vaccine. So I think this is going to take a longer time than people anticipated. And yeah, there will certainly be cases of people stealing vaccine or defrauding the state to get vaccine. But I don't think you can characterize that as one, you know, one particular segment of society or anything at this point. It's just it's just a new process. So there is going to be some cases, I think, of vaccine ending up in the wrong places.
So Jesse McKinley, talk to us a little bit about the eviction moratorium. He's tried to cover his bets a little bit with that, but there are landlords who are going to go broke as a result of this.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a little bit of a conflict between the legislature and the governor. I think the governor did not want to go quite as far as the legislature did by extending this all the way to May. The governor was talking, I think, less than that, or maybe an indeterminate period as set by the executive order. But, you know, earlier this week, on Monday, the legislature passed through both houses, a bill that basically allowed the moratorium to stay in place until May, with no penalties to the people who were renting. Now I think that, you know, there may be a little bit of crying wolf here on the part of some landlords, you know, because a lot of that money will be recouped in theory after the moratorium is lifted. But certainly, you know, there are concerns that kind of some smaller landlords who own a few buildings and are themselves making payments to the banks are really getting squeezed by the fact that they're not taking any income out of their renters. So, you know, once again, with all of this stuff, there's just not enough money to go around at this point. And you're beginning to see, kind of more broadly speaking, you're seeing what happens 9 months down the road from a kind of full-scale economic shutdown, you know, where people lost, you know, millions of jobs were lost. And moreover, that a lot of the kind of survival level jobs, you know, in things like hospitality, like entertainment, like bars and restaurants, those jobs have not come back or they've been eliminated entirely. I mean, you just need to open up the New York Times any day and you see another report of, you know, famous restaurants and famous bars and famous places of where people gather, you know, entertainment venues that are closing and closing for good. And those sorts of businesses employ people, and those they bring down, you know, paychecks. Sometimes, quite frankly, they bring down non-taxed cash, you know, if you're a bartender. Mm-hmm. And those are jobs that pay rent, you know. And I think that, you know, after 9 months of this sort of restrictions, people are running out of money that used to be able to, you know, afford a $3,000 apartment in the city. You know, the savings are gone. The, you know, the nest egg is gone. The calls to mom and dad are not getting returned, and people are either moving out of the city or walking away from those apartments. So that's what you're, I think that's what you're talking about, where you're starting to see landlords not only not getting rent from moratoriums, but also just seeing people walk away from the city and walk away from those rental agreements.
Now, Jesse, the governor has now said we're putting the pay raises for people like me and the comptroller and others on hold. Obviously, it's a good move, I think, in terms of giving reassurance to those who are hurting. But what do you do about that? I mean, if you're Tom DiNapoli or any of those other guys, you just suck it up, right? I mean, what are the choices?
Well, I think in terms of political optics, it's the right move probably for him. And, you know, the last thing you want to do is give an easy headline to someone saying, you know, while, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people out of work, the governor's giving himself a raise. You know, that is not a good look. So no. I think politically speaking, it's probably a prudent thing to do. You know, there will be larger kind of inside the state government, those the pay raises that I think some state workers are due. If those, in fact, are not being implemented, I think that will be problematic with those groups. Once again, I think some of this will shake out in the end, you know, if, in fact, the feds come to the rescue, you know. But once again, it's a very big number. You know, you're talking tens of billions of dollars that the state needs to kind of make itself whole. And certainly a Biden administration is going to be more amenable to those sorts of state bailouts. But, you know, I'm not sure that all of that money is going to, I don't know if the state will be made whole. So some of that will have to, you know, some of those cuts in programs and or reductions in programs or lack of increases in programs, those may be things that elements of state government will need to get used to or at least adapt to for the next couple of years.
So what are you hearing? Is New York State going to prosecute Trump when he's out of there?
I don't know. I'm not well-sourced at all in Cy Vance's office, but what the New York Times is and the indications from our reporting is that those investigations are heating up, you know, and that that there's no, you know, the state, what's interesting, and I think some people don't understand this, and I certainly didn't understand it before I started to cover it, is, you know, the for all the talk of pardons that Trump has given to his associates and has floated for members of his family and for his inner circle and even for himself, those pardons only go as far as federal law. And when you're talking about Cy Vance in Manhattan, those are state laws that he's prosecuting. So that's really where the interest is, because if the Manhattan DA decides to pursue charges against Donald Trump, there's nothing that he or any other Republican president could do to pardon those offenses away. You know, those charges would stick. And it seems like they are; those investigations are continuing.
And I think politically, Jesse McKinley, you know, here's Cy Vance, who's got his own political problems. People want to run against him in a primary. But if he's after Trump, I think that's got to be a powerful reason to reelect him, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of issues that appeal to Democratic voters, prosecuting Donald Trump is probably right up there. You know, that is not a bad thing for Cy Vance to run on, that he's the one guy in town that's willing to take on the soon-to-be former president. And just to extend the thinking here, and of course a lot of this is speculation, or as we call it, politics, but the idea on a federal level is that Joe Biden may not want, you know, to persecute or prosecute Donald Trump once Donald Trump is out of office in order to kind of heal the nation, right? He ran on unifying the nation. Right. He ran on healing. So from a federal level, he may not want, you know, the FBI to go gunning for Donald Trump. But on a state level, Cy Vance doesn't really answer to Joe Biden, right? And moreover, he doesn't really play in the same political ballpark as Joe Biden. So the political pressure, while certainly, you know, Cy Vance would take a call from the president, the political pressure is not going to be there for Cy Vance not to pursue some sort of prosecution. So for people on the left who are dreaming of Donald Trump going to prison or facing at least some sort of civil or criminal responsibility for his past actions, I think that they would probably be betting on Cy Vance rather than on kind of a federal prosecution of any sort.
Absolutely. So on the matter of the census, are we going to lose two congressmen or one?
I think it's going to be close. I think that the early numbers coming out of the census show that the state lost about 130,000 people, 127, something like that, 2019 to 2020. Those do not include actual census figures. Those are just guesstimates, basically, from the census. But we're certainly going to lose one, and maybe by worst-case scenario, two.
Jesse McKinley, we can't thank you enough for always being with us and coming on and telling us what you know. I mean, the New York Times is pretty important in Albany, and it is so important to hear from you. Thank you very much.
Absolutely, Alan. Anytime.